to Wake Up with Ab. You can call us at 724-444-7444, call ID 123030, or Skype me at ab.arato99. And now, on with the show.
Good evening, everybody. You're listening to Wake Up with Ab. I'll be your host. You can call me Tim. This is a confusing night tonight. We're trying something new. We're streaming live on Shoutcast. We normally are over at TalkShoe, but we're trying this for a couple reasons. One, fidelity. I think the call quality should be better, even though it's still, I don't know what the bit rate is for TalkShoe, but I'm pretty sure it's not as high as today's is, which is at 32 right now, 32 kilobytes per second, I guess, or kilobits per second. So we have we were doing some pre-show things. I don't know if anyone is on the air listening, a few of you were, but the difference here is, and this is how I've got it set up so far. We've got two chats. The main chat that we'll post links to, things that are relevant today and the next day and a week later, will be on the first entry on the page, radio.abarato.info. On the first page, we have the entry that says Robin Fisher / Chris Kendall. Start time 8:15. And at the bottom of that page, there's a live fire commenting system where you can post your comments. You do have to log in there. Once you do log in, you can tweet, you can Facebook the links to those posts. Now, if you go to the top of the page, any page really, but at the top of this page, you click on the word chat. And if you're in a Windows system, just hold the control key and click chat, and that will bring up an interface that has a chat system called ChatTangle. Now, if you can't get to that through clicking, you can open a new tab and just go to radioab.chattangle.com, and that will put you there as well. So over here, we can have all the side comments, all the side shows that tend to go on. Anyone who wants to disrupt the chat can go over here and go nuts. But for serious links, I'd like everyone to come over to the show page, which will be posted under Live Fire. Now, if you're listening to a recording of this broadcast, if you want to listen to a live stream of this broadcast in the future, you will go to the stream word at the top of all pages. And when you go to the stream word at the top of all those pages, it will bring up a stream page. Now, let me do that now just so I can remind myself of what's there. Now, on the stream page, we have options. We have the main stream link, which you can click, and that will bring up another browser tab, and it will bring up a pretty neat looking page, and I'll click that now. It's called Radio Ab on the top. Now on the very top, you'll see a web audio player. If you don't see a web audio player with a nice little graphic of a tape recorder, then you probably don't have Flash on your computer. I think that's a flash object on the web page. So you'll have to go install Flash. Almost everyone has Flash. If you're using Google Chrome, it has Flash built in. So you will see that. So once you see that, there is a play button. Press it and you will get the stream. Underneath, request a song. Well, we don't really have any songs here, but you can do that. And underneath, there's a Google map saying current listeners. So far, it looks like there's somebody just in the United States. So, if you go back to the stream page, which is radio.abarato.info/stream, Underneath, there's other links besides the mainstream. We have Winamp, Windows Media Player, Real Player, and QuickTime. They all have their own links to click. And my guess is when you do that, it will load up your respective audio player. And it may or may not sound better. I don't know. There shouldn't be any difference. So that's the technical thing. Bootleg Bill still can't hear. Now every time you hear that popping noise, that pop, that's somebody putting in a Chat Tango chat message. So that is the explanation. I know it's long-winded. If this works, and I think it is working, we'll stick to this on this broadcast. Hopefully we'll all enjoy it. And there won't be any setup next time. Did all that come through pretty good, Robin and Chris?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay. All right, Chris is there. Yeah, tonight we're going to be talking with Robin Fisher and Chris Kendall. Well, one other little show note I got to announce here. At the intro, I did change it. I forgot about it, actually. If you want to call in to the show, we have a phone number, and that is 518-907-4904. I will take your call, 518-907-4904. Or you can Skype in, and my Skype name is ab.irato99. ab.irato99. So do not call the talk show number because I will not answer the phone. If anyone wants to go into talk show, by the way, and let people know to come over here, you're welcome to. Because I know one thing about talk show is if people log in to talk show and don't go to their TalkShoe Live professional Windows application, they won't be able to see past chats. So they'll log into a blank window if they just use a regular JavaScript window. So all this technical stuff, no wonder nobody listens to internet radio. It's just too damn technical. And it's tricky, but rewarding. So once more, welcome to Robin Fisher and Chris Kendall. Two really smart guys that we found on TalkShoe that know a lot about 9/11, a lot about media fakery, and Robin has an incredible wealth of knowledge on, it seems, the occult, the Jesuits, and stuff that I don't know much about. And Robin has an amazing background, an amazing journey he's taken to get to where he is. I've talked to him off the air before. I'm not quite sure how much he's willing to share or you would be interested in hearing. That's all up to him. But because this show started off on 9/11, that was the whole reason I started it. That's the whole reason I got into this whole thing. We can start off, Robin or Chris, talking about 9/11 and maybe some of the reasons behind it, some of the symbolism behind it that most people don't know or most people don't have a clue with. Now, I personally didn't know any of it before Robin told me a lot about it, and I think there's a couple other guys that talked about it as well. So Robin, if you want to start off just giving me some information on the story we don't know about what could have been some of the background, some of the occult, some of the symbolism, then we can just go from there and then we can reach out to Chris because Robin wanted to talk with Chris about how he thinks Chris is at a higher level with all this fakery and probably higher than the average person like myself. So go ahead, Robin.
All right, thanks, Tim. Getting into it a bit farther than just looking at the media fakery, I was listening to you and Chris talk the other week about whether you see stuff like this happening again, like any more false flag attempts. And it started to cross my brain that this is a repeating pattern. And although we might not see one like 9/11 again, they have it in their heads that these are the shock and awe treatments for the world. Because you saw it with the Reichstag fire. I don't know if you guys are aware of that.
A little bit. Yeah. I've heard conflicting things about that, whether it was really a false flag or not. I think the people that support the German people way of looking at things don't think it was. But Chris, you have
an idea on that? Didn't the Nazis set up some retarded dude to take the fall for that? Burning of the German parliament building before he, I think he, not too long after that, declared himself like vice chancellor or whatever.
Yeah.
Kind of like his power grab, yeah.
Yeah. In 1933, they pretty much pulled the same thing as 9/11 to kind of solidify their power. And so I saw that same thing. And it's basically a ritual. From their line of practice, I guess, if that's what you want to call it. And so that's why I say that these probably will happen again over and over. Just, I would think the next one coming from 9/11, because it seems people have caught on to building damage, would probably be more of a weather manipulation from what we see of them kicking up storms left and right, that their occult rituals have changed into a more environmental topic. But I bring that up just because of the fact that it goes into their shock and awe treatment. And I'm going to try and post a link here because shock and awe seems to have its roots in the occult past just the name. Let's see.
Okay, that'll be interesting.
What is it, like the Shekinah? Or?
Yeah, very much.
Oh,
so.
Yeah, you got that right. Shekinah.
I've heard that before. Who would talk about that? Freeman. He does the Freeman perspective.
Never heard of him.
He kind of went into that, the meaning of that. I don't remember all the different, exactly what it's referencing. Something pre-Judaism or something.
Yeah,
like that.
They're ancient blessings from the feminine aspect of God, so the duality of their God, both male and female, this is the feminine aspect to that, I guess, that they play into. But yeah, I just wanted to put that out there as well, because that gives them a bit more of their...
Yeah, could you
powers.
Go into that a bit? Because don't forget, not everyone's reading. I can't read that fast because I'm doing eight things at once.
Did that link come up?
The link is there. I see the link. It's perfectly. If anyone wants to go to it, it's on today's show page, which, of course, once more is radio.aberrata.info. And look for the Robin Fisher, Chris Kendall show title. And underneath, you'll see a live fire link. And in this case, it's on Wikipedia and Shekinah, Shekinah. And what on earth is Shekinah? Please describe.
Well, I'm just doing like all good researchers and scholars do. I'm just going off Wikipedia right now to keep it in layman's terms. But yeah, it was the Hebrew ancient blessing of the feminine aspect of God. And so what they do is they conjure up, I guess, their beliefs of this aspect, this female aspect, and they pay homage to it in their regard. I'm not really sure how they get into it because I don't go that far into practicing the occult. I just research it. But
so that's what this is, the occult, right?
Yeah, because it's basically mysticism. It's obviously just conjuring up spells and hexes through black magic. And that's where the majority of our psyops seem to come from, is this shock and awe system where they can get us to pay homage to not only what they do, but then afterwards the awe of it. Say like Remembrance Day or Armistice Day, where everybody gathers around cenotaphs, which are basically just big phallic symbols in their empty tombs, and people again surrender their spiritual side to not only the massacre that happened to take place of that, but then afterwards as well the worshiping of who created the massacre, I guess. And you can see that with the did you guys ever check out the cult ritual that took place at the bottom of 9/11 at the base in Ground Zero?
Oh, it's like the Olympic-style rings and all that stuff. They were doing it formed like a ring, or I'm not sure exactly. I didn't really pay that close attention to it.
It's pretty much that's about it. They all did a circular formation march around this ring, which really looked like the Eye of Horus that they were trying to spell out for the world to see. And
Sorry to interrupt. What is the Eye of Horus? You can't skip over these terms.
Oh, okay. Eye of Horus. All right.
Remember, I know zero.
Yeah.
Okay, that's Horus.
Yeah. The Egyptian god Horus.
That's the thing on the dollar bill, on top of the pyramid. That's the Eye of Horus. Okay, got it. Good Lord.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
Yeah, you have to remember there's a lot of people that don't have a clue.
Well, with it being all over the internet, who knows? But so they do this ritual to Horus, which is just, again, continuing with their pagan themes and mysticism. Because what they were doing was the take down, or supposedly make it look like they take down their own buildings as a form of death, per se, as, again, one side of the yin-yang. And then they'll do rituals as rebirth and a fertility cult. And that's basically what the shock and awe is part of, is both halves to that whole. And so I was just going to bring across to the people that 9/11 was, even though it was a psyop and media fakery, there was a lot of hidden occult behind it that can even go back again to World War II with the Reichstag bill and their whole... They had a serious follow-up on wanting to put the occult first and foremost within the Nazi Reich. That's basically all it was getting back to pagan traditions. I'll post the link as well for anybody who wants to watch a good hour and minutes of the Nazi occult, and you'll see a lot of similarities in their tactics and styles of thinking, even to the present day with 9/11, which might fill in some background information for people.
Okay.
I'll post that link as soon as I can get to the page. Got so many windows open right now.
No, I know, it's confusing, but it's all worthwhile. There it is. So that's a YouTube link for everyone who is listening to this live and recording. So I'm not going to read out the YouTube link, but it is there on the page. And that's an hour. What exactly is that video titled? What's it called?
The Occult Conspiracy.
So that talks about WW2?
Yes, and the Nazis... quest to basically use mysticism and hidden forces, we'll say, outside of our visible spectrum to help complete their, not only their ideology, but their physical agenda. And they still use that today with 9/11. So, and one good thing in there, that in that video that they bring up, is black propaganda and how they... it's basically a nice word, or a more complicated word, for disinformation. And how they tried to, the British tried to oversee one of the occult magazines getting out. And so they tried to forge it and make their own, send it back into the public, but they kind of got screwed up on the title, which really didn't help them that much in gaining people's favor. But black propaganda is just trying to reverse the spell that is already the propaganda spell. And the Office of Strategic Influence on 9/11 was also part of taking care of black campaigns under the Rumsfeld administration to basically disinform and set back the truth of what was being revealed to the public. And I think we can see that with even heavy speeches from Bush saying, obviously, any type of figuring this out from a free thinker will, you know, to not question his authority, that it all went down the way it should have gone down. So, and you could probably see it with other things, obviously, all the other COINTEL disinfo that was put out on the same stuff. There's probably about, 12 different topics now on 9/11 and how it could have gone down. So I guess their job is pretty complete. But yeah, I just wanted
That's
to bring
black propaganda.
Yes, I'll right. drop another wiki link here. People can get a little heads up of that. And black so again, propaganda. That all goes into their occult mysticism of trying to, again, take care of both sides, even play both sides against the middle to form what Chris was bringing up before in the Hegelian dialect, the synthesis out of all of it.
You heard of all this? Chris, are you into this whole occult angle to the media fakery?
Well, I'm familiar with a lot of the stuff that Rob is talking about, but I'm not real conversant in it, but I am familiar with a lot of the stuff he's talking about. I some of the stuff about the trade towers and how they were laid out and how they correspond to different types or symbols that are in like a Freemasonry or the mystery religions. One interesting thing about the towers being the layout of the towers, if you were to look at a top-down view, and how they pretty closely correspond to the way the Giza Plateau with the three pyramids is laid out. Very strong resemblance to that. And how the Hudson River can correspond to the Nile River, and it, with its relationship to how the WTC was laid out, and corresponding to how the pyramids are laid out, and that sort of thing. And I think that kind of stuff is interesting. I don't know exactly what they're doing with all that, I gather from other stuff I've read that there's some significance in doing these rituals on certain what was called ley lines, and that was we talked about last time we spoke about that documentary, The Secrets in Plain Sight.
Right, that 4-hour thing, the 4-hour YouTube.
Right, and that goes into a lot of that. Just these reoccurring patterns and stuff that are in this architecture all over the world, and going into how I think one of the things they've shown there is how Central Park is in line with certain other architectures that are can't remember exactly. I think it was Arc de Triomphe or something like that. Anyway, the these different significant to the elite or the power elite or whatever you want to call them, they adhere to certain patterns, and they'll be positioned in certain places, you know, around the globe, and they have different significance and meaning, and that it gets incorporated into this ritual aspect of it all. But you know, I've heard a lot of stuff about it. I've heard a lot of discussion about it, but I'm kind of left with the overall impression that it's just kind of scratching the surface, you know, of what really is going on with that all of that, because, you know, looking at that Secrets in Plain Sight video, that that is a lot of stuff that I've never ran across before or heard about, and how it's tying together so many different things that are, you know, in different parts of the globe from different cultures and different, you know, so-called reasons behind, you know, putting, like, you know, let's say the temples in South America or the Angkor Wat in Asia and all that, and how all those, how there's these constant running themes throughout all these different, you know, civilizations that are supposed to be separated by, you know, geography and oceans and all that. And, you know, it's so it kind of like says something about there being a history or being like a something that's so suppressed and so hidden from the average person that it's like, you know, that most of the stuff you're going to hear is only going to be like scratching the surface of it. That's kind of the impression I get after seeing that documentary. But
do you think, Chris, that these people get power from stuff like this, that from things like 9/11 happening, that they can actually absorb energy from the people in doing stuff like that?
I would have to wonder, like, why, if not, why are they so concerned with it being on these ley lines and all that? But see, I really don't, you know, I've heard that, you know, different theories or ideas or stuff, what's going on about channeling spiritual power or spiritual power or some kind of force kind of congregates in certain, you know, areas on the planet. And if that's the case, why do the elite rely so heavily upon you know, television propaganda, indoctrination in schools and that sort of thing, where it's like it's heavily dependent on this direct contact with the individual that's being, you know, brainwashed. And if you look at, you know, how our society and how civilization operates, it's very, very much dependent upon the individual going through a processing, which starts out in, you know, the hospital where you're born. You know, you're given inoculations. You're separated from your mother, so that the natural bonding doesn't happen with the natural hormonal things and stuff that are taking place. That's one thing they do. So it's one thing on top of the other, and then the circumcision. So you go through this birth trauma if you're a male, and then, like, you know, so this idea that, you know, you hear continually about, well, you know, the elite, they're drawing their power from, like, spiritual forces or otherworldly entities, and I'm not denying that. I really don't have a problem believing that at all. Matter of fact, I think that's most likely the case. But how they implement power on the physical realm is through direct contact. In other words, like, there's nothing I can tell where it's just they beam a spirit into you or something and have that kind of control you or influence you to the point where you're acting out according to, you know, quote, their will, unquote. It's the techniques and tactics are, I guess, in other words, anything but ethereal or whatever. They're direct. They're according to sciences that you can observe these things and how they work. You know, this Pavlovian conditioning and stuff that children will go through in school. If you're observant and inward, to reflect on your inward self and to see how you yourself have been undergone a brainwashing and the indoctrination through your whole life and see how that you've been conditioned, you know. You can see that it's really, it's dependent on tactics or sciences.
Yeah.
So how does that fit all? How do you think all that fits into it?
Well, that's why I see like 9/11 being a shock and awe, where they tried to keep the passive state of the people through the indoctrination of TV, and then they'll have a situation like this come up where they need to consolidate all their power at a certain point to get their objectives done, and so they use more direct access to the people with their media fakery to create trauma within the minds of the masses, so they kind of keep pushing them left and right with these events, and there it creates, from even going into their research studies of their monarch butterfly programs and their MKUltra programs through the CIA, that creates these alternate personalities where they can then start to split off a person's thinking ability into certain directions that they want it to go.
Mm-hmm. Have you heard much question. About... I want to go back a bit. A quick question about, Chris was talking about the alignment of the pyramids and that whole area. Did occult and all the characteristics that we're talking about come from the pyramids, or were they done before the pyramids? How long has this been around? Which came first? The chicken and
Babylon,
egg theory
here. I think it stems even further to Babylon. It goes back there. So Egypt was a continuation of that. But before that, it's somewhat obscure because we haven't been led to know a lot about it, except going back, even if you want, that even in the Bible it says that the sons of God mingled with the daughters of men. So maybe something came from there, some type of teaching or some type of passed on knowledge, who knows.
Chris, you were going to say?
Alan Watt talks about, what Robin's referred to is the, Genesis chapter 6 talks about the sons of God, and they mingled with the daughters of men. The account of, if I'm not mistaken, I think that the Tower of Babel, the account of the Tower of Babel is that was after the flood, and Genesis 6 is talking about the intermingling with the sons of God. It's talking, and it's proposed that these are fallen angels that have cohabitated with earth women, in other words. And which would make a lot of sense if you're kind of looking at all the different myths and legends that are, allegedly all around the globe talking about, and I say allegedly because when we're going into history and stuff, it's, I think history has been so messed with, it's hard to know, really. That's the thing. A lot of stuff that's presented about history, I think, is just totally wrong. And how do you know what's real history and what's not? I mean, I don't know, but anyway, these whole legends, and then there was the flood, which wiped out mankind as a result of this cohabitation of the fallen angels and human beings, and but out of that sort of commingling, there was the subsequently the Tower of Babel, which which refers to like the first real like civilization where. Said all the different nations of the world gathered together, and they all acted in one accord to build this tower that would reach up to heaven. And then, according to the Bible, God confused their speech and sent them to inhabit different parts of the globe. But I've heard like Alan Watts say something to the effect that the whole current system, if we're it could have been based upon Nimrod, which is from the Bible and from other legends, is the first actual king of the first actual civilization, at least metaphorically. But I don't know, Robin. What do you know about that, or what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's pretty much along the same lines in layman's terms. That hence the word Babel comes from the mixing up of languages. But at the same time, God dispersed, I believe, the people so that they would come in direct confrontation, and having then direct confrontation with each other in conflicts, that they would seek Him rather than seek acceptance of their enemies. And so it was God's will to kind of keep the people at bay based on that they would honor Him more, having to go through strife with neighboring nations or tongues that were in conflict of their own. But I kind of forgot the question that led us there. What was the question that led us there, Ab?
Well, I was just asking about Egypt, and we're there's all kinds of symbolism, there's all kinds of measurements, there's all kinds of alignments of all the elements.
Yeah, Well, I would say Babel's one of the primary subjects on the occult rituals calendar, because they are already shown that they've made the reconstruction of the Tower of Babel somewhat in building form to the European Parliament, is it? In Germany? Mm-hmm. At Strasbourg, okay. I believe. Yeah, so they are pretty keen on wanting to reconstruct their, I would say, totalitarian world government. And that's basically what Babylon was the center of commerce and trade. And they've already been, from my research, moving their power over to Jerusalem to try and get that going again. I don't know if you guys have seen any news links on how they've been rebuilding certain aspects of Babylon in, was it Iraq? Modern-day Iraq?
Yeah, that was where, wasn't that where, Babylon was supposed to be in Baghdad, Iraq, right?
Yeah. So they're basically just getting back to that whole situation that separated people to begin with, and I believe that will be their final act of rebellion against God, in being the evil one in this world, supposedly, as they see them, keeping men in a cruel and unjust way without having the knowledge of good and evil. And that's Satan's false lie, I think, to the people who run the show on this planet. That they can achieve this with some type of regard to help evolve their stance and become gods themselves. And that's why a lot of the occult takes place in most of these things, like psyops and stuff, is basically using adversity, even if there's none to begin with, because it's media fakery, they use adversity to bring man up to code in a way. And I guess that gets back to what you were saying in the previous interview with Chris about how they do this for a military industrial gain, but they try to keep what good they can of mankind so they can evolve their stance in a eugenic kind of way as well, past the pills and the vaccines and inoculations. Kind of evolving the soul of man, I guess, rather than the physical aspect when they involve all this occult stuff from Babylon, even into our new age. And I think that's what a lot of people don't see out there, even the trained people, is that most of the suits and ties that people are wearing, the people behind it are still high priests. They consider themselves still high priests. So when something like 9/11 gets pulled off, that it's not so much people in, I would say, at a bottom level just military men in suits and a political agenda. It's actually like it's a high priest thing that's going on, and that whole high priest thing is definitely what influenced World War II. Well, a lot of wars actually around the world, and most of them. But
so
these are the
who. Sorry to interrupt. Who would see these things? Because I sure wouldn't see them. I wouldn't have a clue. And I have difficulty visualizing it all, even when you're describing it over and over again. So who on earth would see these occult symbols? Would religious people see them? Would priests see them? Rabbis see them? Or would they just have to be told, like me, this is actually what happened? It's more than what you see. It's more than a government conspiracy. It's more than a military conspiracy. It's a way higher level. So who would be able to see this?
I don't think a lot of people do see it because it threatens their existence and their way of life. So they kind of, I think, have a cognitive dissonance on that. They take what they want and leave the rest. So they'll get to a certain plateau and say, okay, well, missiles didn't hit the... Excuse me, missiles didn't hit the Trade Center, but we'll just kind of go with it anyway, because any further research or digging will lead us into an area we're probably not wanting to be, which is, because it's all black magic that it goes down to, I think people understand that in the back of their heads, even if they don't know what they're getting into, and I think that just kind of scares them from getting to that point. And even I think a lot of religious people are led away from looking at the real goings on in this world is being something of that, that power and the priest kind of deal. Because they're kind of, again, there's so many things that are changed in our world and whitewashed that, a lot of that history is erased to think that humans have evolved in a more, natural sense of fighting over certain things for simple reasons. They don't understand that people are actually, like, very much controlling the scenes with their, runes and with their sorcery and, cause that just, it tickles a lot of heartstrings for people I just don't think they want to believe into. But there's a lot of people out there I think are coming better familiar with it because of the advent of the internet. So they can start seeing now more realistic approaches to things because of the amount of information that's getting put out there. So I think people are kind of getting used to it. Maybe they've played a lot of Nazi zombie shooting games back in the past, so they're getting used to Nazi zombies running the world. But until that point, unfortunately, there's a lot of indoctrination going through the churches as well, so they don't even see how, say, the Roman Catholic Church is a continuation of pagan Babylon. They just can't put two and two together. And scripture's been changed to a lot of people in this world as well. So when they go to even realize what the supposedly moral absolute is, or the truth, past the truth, that they are hoodwinked there as well. So it takes a real curiosity and a quench, like a thirst in a way, to be able to want to understand, I think, this at any real deeper level than just what we're told to think about it, and on many different avenues where we're told to think about it.
Chris, have you, I'm not a religious person, so I wasn't brought up with any religion at all. I'm just curious, are you a religious person in the sense that you went to church and were taught some of these things?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I went to church, and I've read the Bible all the way through several times.
Wow.
Pretty familiar with what it says. I know that's something that's misrepresented a great deal, is what the Bible actually says when you're going into any of these esoteric truthers, you know, that are putting out the different stuff. And one thing that, like Alan Watt or this guy Freeman or a lot of these different ones that kind of go into the subject matter, is that they have a thing in common where they'll misrepresent what the Bible says, or, you know, to a large extent. And, which is I find interesting. But yeah, there's some stuff though that I'm conflicted about as far as the Bible, and I do hold to my faith, even though I don't attend church anymore. I was told that that the church I attended, the particular denomination, was I was told the effect that, oh yeah, we have a lot of Freemasons that are members. And I said, well, okay, so what you're telling me is that you have members of the church here that are Freemasons, which is a group that petitions Lucifer, and that's a big part of their rituals. And I found that to be pretty disconcerting, and I just decided I wasn't going to attend. And that among other reasons, I don't see in any denomination anything that resembles what was discussed in the Bible as far as the way that people conducted themselves, as far as their worship and attitudes toward one another and everything. I don't see that today.
Uh-huh. Do you see, Chris, that a lot of these psyops like 9/11 are pulled off to continue their religious agenda, though? Even if they don't want to try and push it on you as being correct, obviously they don't, because of how much they've deceived everyone, even within the churches. Yeah. No matter what type of religion they believe in, everybody's deceived for the most part on the profane level, as we call it. But do you believe at their level that everything that they do is for a religious reason then?
I'm not so sure. I mean, it seems when you get into this this sort of hidden twilight language stuff that's going on, which clearly there is, that it has that definite ritual aspect to it. But what exact participants are? I think I would have to guess that probably the majority of the participants are mainly pragmatists and not religionists, not doing it from a religious motivation, but I do believe though that at some level, yeah, it's definitely has to do with promoting certain beliefs or perspectives about the world.
Yeah, like an arcane philosophy bent upon world domination.
Right. I think one of the things that with the 9/11 ritual, I mean, which was being parroted, which was being put out there pretty heavily, and I noticed too that there was a lot of stuff that was really hammered on after the initial effects of 9/11 were still fresh in everyone's minds, and they were really ripe for this programming, because there's this highly emotional, excited state. And then from what I understand, that's when your mind is much more receptive of new ideas and being able to be influenced. And one thing that I really noticed, this point was going to be driven home, that 9/11 happened because of religion. You need to understand that 9/11 happened because these Muslims are God-sick freaks that want to kill other people because of their religion. And that's what you need to take away from 9/11. That's something that was, like, hammered home early on. So,
yeah, I don't know if it was really about the Muslims, though. It was more like the elite's own religion that they were trying to hammer home.
Well, there's different things going on at different levels, but I think that's what was something that as far as reshaping the average person's mind and their way of thinking was to really pin 9/11 on religion and religious differences. Because did you know? Do you remember a lot of the different television productions and the stuff that were happening, like within the weeks following 9/11? Do you remember like some of the? I remember one where it was a gathering, and I don't remember precisely where this was, but there was popes, pontiffs, religious leaders, pastors that had assembled at this maybe it was at the UN, I don't know what the venue was, but in other words, saying, you know, we need to set aside our differences, you know, we need to do away with this dogmatic of thinking about God that will cause people to war and fight over beliefs and that sort of thing. Sort of this pushing one world religion.
The ecumenical movement. They were using two warring religions supposedly to rub them up against each other to such a horrendous point that people just kind of lose all faith in religion altogether and just go into the one world system.
Right. Yeah, I saw that. But like what you're asking as far as how that they were promoting an occultic religion or what? I really don't maybe I don't know, maybe you could expand on that.
Well, so. Do you when you saw the towers fall there and they wanted to kick off a war and go into Afghanistan and such, do you see it as them getting into Afghanistan to strictly control poppy fields or for resources, or do you see it being a crusade of some sort?
Oh, well, yeah, I see what you're saying on that. On, you know, it was even referred to as a, I think maybe it was even Bush maybe alluded to it, and there was several others that alluded to this idea that it was, you know, this 21st century crusade, you know, of the Christians against the Muslims.
I'm gonna come up.
And, you know, a lot of religious iconography and stuff being brought into play. And sort of intermingled with this nationalistic fervor that was going on, and then of course, you know, when you get into the Zionists, and that really supercharged that whole because, you know, Bush, new Republican president at that time. excuse me, I remember a lot of politics kind of leading up to 9/11. I'm trying to think of 90s politics, Pat Robinson, the religious right. John Hagee. I mean, now people might dismiss them as being just, you know, TV preachers or whatever, but no, they represent an actual pretty large body of political thought in the United States, you know, with conservatism and all that. And you saw that kind of really played up in, kind of decades leading up to, 9/11. And I think that a lot of that kind of dovetailed and coalesced into the this whole anti-Muslim sentiment, which is, you know, plays into the, you know, whole Palestinian thing with the and how they're embattled against terrorists, you know, in the form of these Palestinians, you know, with their belt bombs and all of that, and, you know, yeah, as far as, like, on the world political stage, you know, definitely, yeah, all that taking place, sort of like this, you know, George Bush leading this new crusade against this Arab threat.
Yeah, Have you looked throughout history, and most of history has pointed to the most wars and movements being crusades? Have you noticed that trend in connection?
Well, crusades, like how would you define like crusade?
Counter-reformations, pretty much.
Like a counter-reformation.
Yeah. Like, they were at times obviously as bloody as the Spanish Inquisition or World War I or World War II, but they're also actually as subtle as, say, the 60s hippie movement.
Right, okay.
So I was just wondering if you've noticed those dots come across your research and approach and perspective at looking at these things and how it might be these occult influences are basically keeping this counter-reformation alive until its very end. Because there's been plenty of quotes out there, too, by Italian high masonry that they won't stop until they get their Luciferian one world government. So it's not just a matter of being a one world in terms of political or commerce. They're looking at it to be some type of an occult government. I was wondering if you happen to, you see that obviously with the Masons as you go into their lodges on a normal level, but I was just wondering if you connect the dots to see this at a counter-reformation level that they've been trying to extinguish. And through the Jesuits, being the military arm of the Vatican, trying to extinguish all form of true, I guess, Christian or Orthodox belief in this world and bring an ecumenical movement.
Right. What did Albert Pike, in that document where he's foretelling the how these different world wars would play out, and he talked about the Third World War.
Yeah, being against Gog and Magog.
Yeah, Gog and Magog would be would be representative of the East and West being the West being the Christian forces and the East being the Muslim forces.
Yeah, and basically. So like 9/11 was sorry to cut you off. 9/11 was like kind of a kickoff to all of that.
Yeah, sort of. Yeah, kicking that off, and then you know, when that had played out, then it would be the atheists pitted against the believers, and that thesis and antithesis would come the Luciferian doctrine.
Yeah.
And that's what bring in the Luciferian order. Sort of this exact, I mean, I don't know, man. How do you see that, something like that playing out? I know atheists, I mean, there's plenty of atheists around, but, you know, I follow, I mean, the stuff that's out there on the web, I see, like, some contentious battles going on between, and I engage in them myself with the evolutionists and the atheists and, discussing creationism and evolutionism and all that. But as far as they're, like, looking at that and kind of drawing out this idea that there's going to be this sort of future great battle between those that believe in God and the atheists, I don't see how that's going to play out. I mean, I don't know. What do you think about that?
That's like what Albert Pike said. They'll just be swallowed up anyway, the atheists, because they were to be released under basically their command. Atheism was to be spawned out and created, like it has been with the teachings of evolution and so forth, but that will also be used as part of the Hegelian dialect to be used against their last synthesis, or to create their last synthesis. But I was just wondering, if most of what you see here going on is actually just counter-reformations trying to keep that whole, like that is the agenda. Do you see that as being the agenda to, and so these psyops and everything that happened, like with 9/11, there is obviously a lot more than meets the eye, even with figuring it out to a level of media fakery, that they're trying to guide these people along and keep them going with this shock and awe treatment.
Well, you know, what has been the outcome of this, you know, reaction to 9/11? We're seeing, well, it's, you know, you see it in the average person, how you had this sort of change in mindset. Wasn't really, from what I can tell, a very startling or drastic change, but there was a definite shift in sort of the overall mindset towards governmental authority, to where it's anybody with a badge or that has you know, a uniform or is acting under the pretext of any kind of like a government authority or anything like that, they're given a lot more deference, you know, like, well, they could, you know, like, we got to let them do what they want. Yeah, they're given, it's like the perceived power that the government has over the individual, I think it had went up several notches after 9/11. You understand what I'm saying? So it's sort of like across the board, as far as the average mindset, sort of this shift towards for the average person, more of strengthening that relationship. In other words, that subordinate relationship to their government. But then on the other hand, you have like 9/11 truthers and other people that say, well, I'm just not buying it, and this sort of split, you know, between groups. But
yeah, do you see them as using that as like 9/11, using it as a distrust tool, so that way they can try and bankrupt their, like, well, they're already bankrupt, the governments, but like destroy them from the inside out based on distrust? Where the military, as you brought up previous, will always stay present, but the government can go, and then it can kind of lead back to the high priest, basically like in the olden days, running things rather than having a government.
Well, just seeing what's out there, I would say that there's more of a demarcation between people who are anti-authoritarian and people who are just pretty much go along to get along types, you know. Mm-hmm. And so there's a more of a rift there. But yeah, as far as that, how that could be used, I could definitely see, you know, that is definitely now being used. And I think where it's concealed to the average person is because it's something that would be a lot more apparent if you were inside of, let's say, law enforcement, where you're looking at the different memos and you're looking at the different, and you're getting word passed down to you from different channels that are within your operating circle, you know, now going from you entered into this world of law enforcement, and now that you are privy to some many things that the average person isn't privy to. And I would guess that their whole perspective on terrorism and that sort of thing is different from the average person. I believe that they get a different sort of indoctrination than the average person gets. And when I'm talking about law enforcement, I'm talking about the court system, I'm talking about the police, I'm talking about all the different bureaucracies and that are associated with them. And, so that, yeah, they have this us against them mentality that's sort of starting to see more and more set in now.
Yeah, have you noticed, I was going to bring this up, when I was down in America not too long ago, I was talking to a gentleman who was part of police services and then moved to rear. And I don't know if you've noticed this trend, that they're consolidating a lot of their power now from community establishment of policing services into the Homeland Security. So it's not becoming like state police services anymore. It's now just going to be like a big federal service. Do you see that happening?
Fusion centers. Yeah, let me get a... I just... I'll, can I just interrupt?
Yeah.
I think they're fusion centers. I've been listening to a lot about that. Jim Fetzer comments all the time about these fusion centers. So maybe that's what Robin's alluding to.
Oh, they're doing that. They're doing that on many different levels, blurring the lines between the federal government and the state government and the and your local city government. You know, that goes into, like, I just got this, you know, a ticket for expired registration, you know. But, okay, I went down there and I took care of the late fees and all that. But here I have an additional penalty that's from the federal government. So they're enforcing and enacting penalties on stuff that are state matters and stuff. So, you know, and I'm going to go down to federal court. It's not city. Oklahoma. It's not a state of Oklahoma. This is a federal court. I got to go appear before a federal court judge for a fucking sticker.
Is that the one where Marcus told you to get the sweater as the same university as the judge?
Yeah.
Good advice. I like it. Yeah. Hold on. Is that because you were caught on federal lands?
Yeah, whatever they want to call federal land. I guess they can call federal land the wildlife refuge. So.
Okay. That's not state grounds or state park. That's not a state park or state lands. It's got federales enforcing law on that area.
Yeah, apparently so. So, but, you know, that, from what I understand, that didn't exist, until relatively recently, probably post 9/11, where you know, that was federal land, but they didn't have federal enforcers there. I think they had rangers from I'm not sure exactly. I don't know, but I'm fairly certain that those federal police and rangers haven't been there that long. They haven't been there longer than 10 years. I know that. So,
Homeland Services was basically the birth child of 9/11, wasn't it?
Homeland Security.
Security, yeah, with the, they've created these massive agencies and stuff that are, doing these administrative stuff on different levels, you know, even further increasing, blurring the lines between, you know, the different, supposed separation of powers and stuff that's in the Constitution and all that. Constitution is, I think a long, long time ago, it was set to the side. I mean, I stumbled across a law just looking up this little registration fee thing, and it says in the Constitution, it clearly flatly states that the federal government cannot, here I'll read it to you, it's the United States versus Constantine, the conclusion of this particular Supreme Court decision. And this is in the Constitution. This is down at my local library. It says the national government has no power to impose an additional penalty for infractions of state law. And, you know, this come out of the booze clubs and stuff where, you know, that the federal government couldn't come in and impose additional penalties that the state had already imposed on the different, alcohol distributors and stuff in the United States years ago. But, that principle of law still is. But see, that doesn't stop them from just, you know, doing any and everything to raise revenue and to steal from the people. But, there's going to be more and more and more of this, in other words.
Back in the day, I forget if there was actual proof. I forget who it came from. I remember somebody, I think Eric Phelps, saying that right after the Constitution, that it was usurped to put in that all the people of the country were to be federal first, and state was to be subservient to that. Whereas before, when the Constitution was supposedly made, that you were state and then federal.
But the original plan was to...
And there was, yeah, the original plan was to keep capitals in all the states as well, but the Jesuits usurped that and brought in consolidation again to put it all under one house, and that's why every government around the world is pretty much all modeled after the same way, so they can keep tracks, keep tabs on people better, because if every state had its own capital, had to do commerce and trade and in affairs with every other state, that would be too much to control, so... And I thought that was one of the first things they did to the Constitution was ratify that so that you become now federally owned rather than state owned in a way. So yeah, they can implement whatever laws they want on you or taxes past state law because now you're federal property.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's, but I mean, what are we talking about? We're talking about a bunch of ink on paper, really.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't really have too much pull.
Right. I mean, if you think about it, okay, here I just read a Supreme Court decision. Big whoop, man. What was that? That was just going to some court they call courts. They sit around. They say, well, what are we going to do in this case? Well, they interpret whatever they want to interpret into the law as they go along. They can This source reference that I got this from, the only one available at their library was from 2002, so that's 10 years old. That could be null and void for all I know right now. But, you know, but the point being, it shifts and changes with the wind, man. They change it on the fly. And I'm sure that when this United States versus Constantine was decided upon, more than likely, if you were to look into it, it probably was decided that way because it benefited some interest, some money interest somewhere. You know what I mean? So it was sort of a way for, you know, commerce and stuff to continue without...
morality.
Without morality by having this sort of these conflicting interests that sort of kind of keep each other in check. They call it checks and balances, but you're seeing that now as that has, like, you know, 200 years, I mean, it's no time, how that's just so rapidly eroded, where it's like they're all just totally working in tandem because it, you know, it hasn't taken them that long to figure out, you know, they're, you know, if you've seen that movie Idiocracy,
yep,
the lawyer guy, man, he's the guy. He watch him. What is he, you know, what does it take to get him motivated, get him going and get him on the plan? It's just, hey, I could get you money. And he says, I like money. And he just goes right on. I'm telling you, they show you exactly what's going on in this country with these lawyers and people. That's all they care about, man. That's all they care about is money. That's what motivates them. That's why they're in the game.
Yeah, and if they, yeah, I heard a good quote too, that if anybody thinks that they're going to leave that money behind, that they're, you know, damn wrong. And I see that, but they print the money. So I seem to think that, again, it goes to a higher means. Because I think the commerce system is just a form of control in a way of suppression, and rather than actually, because if it was actually anything good, it would work, and 2 + 2 = 4. And in our economy or system, obviously, it's not worth talking about because it equals 5. So I don't know how they can continue to use it as something that works, because it just doesn't make sense when you break it down. But do you see that America, ever since its foundation, has been trying to get reined under some type of control?
Well, I mean, I don't know if it was ever, you know, we're told that there was this American Revolution.
Yeah, I don't so much believe, sorry to cut you off, I don't so much believe that there was a founding of the country that people believed was genuine or grassroots. I just mean that the people themselves were given a new lease on life from European tyranny at that time. And being halfway across the world, that they had to, the tyranny elite had to rein in those people very quickly from having any type of real freedom, because they would start to see what a crock history was and how it went about. Do you see that as America's kind of, with these psyops and 9/11, that it's basically a way of just demoralizing a country so bad that they'll give up on their own?
Well, I think we've been seeing that since, like, you know, Richard Nixon, that whole thing. That was for the time, you know, the whole Watergate affair and all that. That was pretty heavy duty. It was pretty shocking, and it's kind of came on the heels of the, you know, the sexual revolution and breaking down the traditional family, and then kind of like say, okay, now here's your government discredited, and then, you know, that's been continued on up through the different presidencies, and then, like, you know, you had Clinton and the Monica Lewinsky thing, and then it's like the open infidelity and stuff, and the stuff they talked about taking place in the White House. So it's kind of like you have the what the government represents to, you know, many people as this sort of parental figure, which, you know, we can't deny that aspect of our government, because definitely you can see if people, they look at the government as their parent, because, you know, they you know, more pronounced so that the traditional family structures have been demolished. And so that was kind of like the introduction to this idea that, you know, this arena that, you know, the common person thought was, you know, pretty much squared away as far as, you know, it's corrupt, and you know, there's all kinds of infidelity and stuff taking place there, even in the Oval Office, you know. So that was kind of like a benchmark of like what you're talking about, sort of getting people just to start moving away, or kind of just completely discrediting this idea of this so-called great experiment, or whatever America was supposed to be, like this bastion of freedom and all that. Yeah, I definitely see that.
What are your thoughts, Chris, on nothing happening in Canada per se? Like, how come Canada, in your opinion or perspective, has such a low quality or a low number of population, and how Canadian lands haven't been as influenced as hard as American lands, even though there's hardly a border? You know, again, it's just an imaginary border. So what stops a lot of Americans from going north, and what stops a lot of psyops from only happening down south? Have you ever looked into that, why they care so much about America and not Canada, per se?
I just assume it's because Canada's so damn cold up there, ain't it?
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah.
I mean, realistically, man, it's just, don't you guys get just hammered? It's kind of every, don't you have like 9 months of pretty harsh winter? And
it used to be like that. I think it's getting quite milder as the years progress, thanks to NexRad and HARP.
Yeah.
It depends.
Maybe it's the Canadians that are running the whole show, and they're using the weather control to kind of warm things up there and make it more, I don't know. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, I did hear people talking about how Canada was involved in 9/11, Canadian intelligence. I did hear that going around.
Really?
Pretty
I never heard that.
Yeah, check that out from Unhive Mind. I'll drop the link in, and you can search it on the website. But he has pretty good indication that Canada was helpful in 9/11 being worked out in its stages.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. And I'm just wondering if that's why they're trying to take down America, because they want to rush the north when they're done. I think they got enough gas and petrol to keep their places warm if they ever wanted to move here, but I just wonder why Canada doesn't get hit as hard to kind of keep them in line. Maybe because the population is pretty passive to begin with.
Well, they know that any media in the U.S. comes here anyway, so why would they initiate it here? Because, number one, it wouldn't make the news. Or, well, they make the news, so it would just be harder. I don't see what the point would be.
So have you guys heard of this? I bet you Robin has. Have you looked at any of the documentaries that this guy Christian Pinho puts out?
No. Can you put that in the chat?
I never heard of him.
At least, I don't recognize the name. Maybe I might have come across something, but
so he's coming from a Christian worldview perspective, and goes into the different occult symbolism of that's found in Washington, and there's a documentary that deals with Freemasons, and there was one that I just recently watched was The Hidden Faith of the Founding Fathers, and I'll put this one in the chat.
All right. Yeah, put it in live fire there.
I'm sorry, what was that?
Yeah, I was just saying put it into the live fire there underneath. Yeah, you know where to put it. By the way, just take a little breather here. You're listening to radio.abberato.info. This is Wake Up With Ab. We're waking up to the occult, to some of the higher level angles of media fakery in 9/11, and you're listening to Robin Fisher and Chris Kendall go at it. Very interesting stuff. Most of it, like I said, I don't really understand, but I know you guys do, so keep going at it.
Yeah, I was just going to get back to what Bootleg Bill was saying in the chat about Canada, USA, and Mexico, and that's one of their occult that's the things like 9/11 helped kick off is crusades, but they also help bring about the transition from, say, the Club of Rome trying to enact a 10-province district of the states, if not a 10-country world or a 10-kingdom world. And USA has 46% of the population is Catholic, and or 23, I mean, sorry, and Canada has 46, and Mexico has 90. And so by dropping the borders, getting back to Chris's comment about a kind of a Christian view of what's happening, that the truth behind the truth seems to be that they can solidify their power to Rome in a way by knocking the borders down and basically taking their socialist countries and merging them together to kind of eradicate what Christian ideals are left that they haven't got through with Armenianism or other things.
Yeah, why don't you talk a little more about that? Because we were talking about that off air about the ultimate goal, and I got confused when I was trying to explain it to somebody else. Are you saying that those that control the world are trying to get rid of organized religion, or they want to promote it?
They want to get rid of the religions they can't control, which is all of their, well, which is basically the teachings of Christ. And that's why all the Bibles are pretty much manipulated, except the KJV or Geneva Bible. They're the pretty, they're the truth behind the truth, and that's why they've been suppressed for so long, and that's why so many people have died under the Roman Catholic Church for even possessing a Bible. Like a KJV
is King George Version.
King James Version. And that's why James had an assassination. Yeah, and that's why King James even had the assassination attempt put on him by the Jesuits, the Guy Fawkes whole fiasco. Even though he was a Mason, he didn't want to be under Catholic rule. And I see that. As you can see, a lot of multiculturalism is a disguise for the mass immigration of Catholics. If you look at Norway, Norway was primarily a Lutheran, and it was set up in its constitution to be a Lutheran country. And it went to war ever since it signed that into its constitution on the first page, stating that no Jesuit or monastic orders would be tolerated within the kingdom. And ever since they've usurped that since 1956, because that was the last final bit of the constitution that allowed the Jesuits back in, you can see that it's even says on the Wikipedia for Roman Catholics in Norway that 70% of them are born abroad. And so what they do is bring in Roman Catholics to basically help control their run in the country and keep it under the temporal power of Rome. And I see that as being pretty good evidence for the way things have been done over the years to any given country, is if you don't want to play by the rules of Rome, as in America's case, even though they were founded still by the Romans in a way, that they pull things like psyops off and go in and try and destroy your country. And it was the same with Vietnam and the killing of Buddhists. That was really a Inquisition on that front, and it wasn't about America trying to seal any type of its own victory. But I'll just getting sidetracked here. I got so many links on, but I'm just going to copy and paste some links into the chat.
So they're trying to get rid of the Buddhists too, because they can't control them. So
yeah, so they want they want Catholics in their country, I guess. Most importantly, I'm not saying Catholics are bad. I'm just saying that Babylonian religion that has the Christian veneer is the Luciferian doctrine hiding behind it. And so at that point, the more people that they can have already in line with that the better their chances are to keep their power and their totalitarian governments.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you look at some of the most greatest technological advancements, that was the link I just posted there for Norway.
Yeah. I was going to say, put that under live fire there, Robin, if you could.
Okay.
Yeah, because I don't. The links in the chat are just going to scroll right off the page, so anyone who's listening to this as a recording, as I know many people will not get that. They won't have. It'll be hard for them to find, because that's sort of a joint chat that will just scroll off in with new shows. So yeah, please put it. I know it's a little confusing. Yep. We've got two chats. Everyone who's listening, we've got on each show we're doing here, we have live fire chat for the links. And just for miscellaneous ramblings, we have Chat Tango. So Bootleg Bill, you're putting lots of links in. Feel free to put them into the show page, the live show page. That's you can do that. So go ahead, Robin.
Okay, I was just getting back to the whole multiculturalism is the disguise. And so then they can keep people in their control within their countries.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be somewhat of the bigger agenda, because that will bring about the, how do I explain it? Their occult agenda, in a way. Because behind these religions that they've created is their occult mystery Babylon and pushing them all forward. And the countries that have been destroyed, America for the most part, England's been heavily damaged through economics, and the same with Germany, which was the country that started the Protestant Reformation. These countries have all been wiped off the map for the most part in their social, political, and economic constructs. And that was one of the whole reasons that Germany went to World War I and World War II, was to try and destroy the country so bad, because Hitler actually was Jesuit-trained and had a, how did he say it? He had a personal vendetta against Martin Luther and that whole push to get away from the Roman Catholic Church. And so That's why Germany was hauled into the war and under the disguises, in many disguises. And so that seems to be, if you connect the dots in history, the way that things have been shaped out at a foundational level, like the truth behind the truth seems to be that all of these psyops, 9/11 included, and world wars, movements, freedom movements, have been trying to keep, like, what the Jesuit oath stated, the kings in check, you know, and if anybody wants to step outside of that, then their country will be destroyed until they get back in line. And I'm just wondering if he's seen that trend rolling, if he's seen that kind of Christian perspective. And when I mean Christianity, there's a really harsh difference from the people who've read the actual Bible and something of an authoritative version of, to say, is the KGV or Geneva, to that which is happening. There seems to be a huge trend that there's this push to eradicate this style of thinking. And when countries, because if you look at all the socialist, fascist, totalitarian governments and regimes in the world, they've all come from Catholic countries. And those are the most heavily oppressed countries in the world. Looking down in South America, looking over to Asia's, and even in Europe now with the European Union happening. I'm just wondering if Chris has seen those same kind of trends happening, if he notices the truth behind the truth in some of what the Bible speaks on that.
Yeah, that's interesting about the like in South America, they've had dictatorships there. Well, I mean, what about China? I mean, they're not necessarily Catholic. They have a pretty oppressive dictatorship there.
Well, that's what we're told.
That's what we're told. But even in we're told that Vietnam was being overtaken by the, communists.
Yeah.
And pretty bad stuff going on with the, allegedly what we're told, with the communists and all that. I don't know if I really see the sort of more oppressive regions coming out of where you have a large population of Catholics. I don't know if that's something I've noticed that, or I can't say that I have, or even thought about that. So, I wanted to finish what I was saying with that, about that documentary, because it kind of ties into what you were just talking about. One thing it went into was pointing out the fact that the Capitol building in D.C. and St. Peter's Basilica in the Vatican, that's modeled after the Basilica in Rome. And if you look at a picture of it, you see what I'm talking about.
Right, and the layout of D.C., do you want to speak to that? Do you know about that, Robin, as well? The layouts and the angles. That was in the movie, Chris, right? In plain sight,
yeah,
I believe.
Plain sight, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty well stated, that the Washington Capitol is a direct model. And even the Vatican's figures of 666, is it meters or feet, is the same as the Washington Monument. And you can see how the Triple Tau is worked into the layout of Washington as well. And the same with the pentagram, or the hexagram, and all their other occult symbolisms. It seems like they can't make a city without having that as part of their urban planning. But it's the same with London. Same with London. London's the same way. It's got its own, I think as talked about before, it's got its own center, and that's the finance capital of the world. That's why I was wondering if you took a Christian perspective of some sort, because the beast, the second beast in prophecy was going to be, which, the woman rides, is going to be modeled after the first beast, and the first beast was Roman Catholicism in a way. So the only country to have a hard stance and completely owned right now, from you, from the research on Obama's papal masters to that of any other country's papal masters, is that the U.S. is almost an identical copy of Rome through almost everything that they do. So,
so it doesn't really stop at the Capitol building resemblance to the Basilica in Rome. It goes It also goes into as well with George Washington converting to Catholicism. You heard about that?
No, so I didn't know he was up on Catholicism.
Yeah, allegedly on his deathbed, he called for a Jesuit priest to baptize him into the Roman Catholic Church. And so he died a Catholic. And there was also accounts from his slaves, allegedly, that he would frequently attend Catholic Mass. Like, so when they're on their expeditions or whatever, he would dip into a Catholic church and attend Mass regularly. So, you know, he allegedly was attended a Episcopalian church, but he was actually a sort of a closet Catholic, which is, I had never heard that before. That was something that came out in that hidden faith of our founding fathers. Thought that was interesting.
Yeah, it's okay.
I was going to ask about WW2 again, because I don't remember a lot of stuff, but I remember you were talking about how certain areas of Germany were targeted because of certain people in certain regions were... Can you re-explain that to me?
Oh, well, again, part of destroying German heritage of the Protestant Reformation, that the northern parts of Germany were excessively carpet-bombed and allowed to be carpet-bombed because of their Protestant heritage, while the Catholic South was hardly touched. And that goes along the lines of even companies not being bombed when they knew they could bomb companies, like IG Farben not getting bombed, but other companies would have their businesses totally destroyed through those campaigns. So it's along the same lines of it's a very planned out, this seems to be the global agenda, is a very planned out Roman Catholic dictatorship where they strike where they want and they try to leave their own alone.
So their own would be the South Roman Catholics, and they can control them.
Yes, yeah, because they can't control the Protestants.
Oh, I see. So they can't control the Protestants because they're literally protesting against the Catholic Church, and they're not under their control.
Yeah, and they take a more truth behind the truth stance of the Bible, where they understand what has been added and what hasn't, and they, based on their prophecies from back in the day, that they can see through divine inspiration from God that this was supposed to be the way it's supposed to be. And I think the Catholics at that level, at the Roman Catholic Church at the highest level, they understand that too, and that's why they've created things like the Jesuits to be the Counter-Reformation tool. And it's even stated in the Vatican II, which was upheld there, that they haven't changed their stance on the Council of Trent, that they will go after Protestants and kill in the name of their God. Even though they eloquently reworded it, Pope Benedict still believes that's the same and nothing is going to change on that. So their stance is still out in the open from Vatican News that they are continuing their Counter-Reformation.
Hmm. Okay. Interesting. What are they going to do with the Muslim world? It's the fastest growing population on Earth. They have no control over that, do they?
They do have control over it, because any religion that denotes Christ to be just a prophet, they have no problem with, because that still serves their ultimate aims. But they also helped create Catholicism, and there was a good guy, Cardinal B, who was a high-ranking Cardinal Jesuit, that came out and stated how they helped Muhammad train to be who he was with the Bedouin tribesmen, and to be nurtured by nuns and Catholic doctrine from then on in. And you can see that with Islam having Mary as part of the Trinity, when he should have been more in tune with what actually was said about the Trinity. Anyway, that they if you look in Middle Eastern countries, a mosque is set up right next to a Catholic cathedral. But yet, if you were to go over speaking Christianity, you'd probably be, you know, taken out in a second, in a polite way of putting it. But Islam was created to do the dirty work and take over Jerusalem back in 70 AD with Titus. And so that's why they really created that. But yeah, it's kind of gotten out of hand because they've taken it to extremes. The Muslim world, they don't understand how they've been hoodwinked, as well as the Catholic religion population, and even Christianity. Uh-huh. That it seems everybody's on a different page when it comes to who's actually creating and running these things, and everybody at the end, the profane, supposedly, as they call them, or the goyim, they're just left to get the exoteric version rather than the esoteric version. But no, Islam I see actually having doing the dirty work, and somewhat, if there was going to be another war, that Islam would win that, but then would easily fall themselves to whatever would be the leftovers. They're just, again, there to do the dirty work, so.
So they can control, you say Muslims are on, in their control,
yeah.
They're on the same page. So they're not
a threat. Yeah, because when you get, they're not a threat. Because when you get to the Freemasonry, because the God of the Quran is the same God as Babylon, and it's not, they don't obviously believe in God being the Messiah of who he was. But anyway, the Freemasons at a 32nd degree, to get to the 33rd honorary degree, have to swear as Shriner Freemasons, and that's the ultimate level for Freemasonry, and they swear on the Quran, and that's why you have pictures of even the Pope kissing the Quran, is because they at those highest levels know that there's no difference between their Babylonian pagan religion and that of Islam. But the people the lower good Muslims that, you know, go along with this religion don't understand that, because if they were to see the truth out there in a lot of things like sculptures, you know, a lot of deity symbolism, that they would start to piece together how it's corrupt from the get-go, and all the good things, I guess, in the Book of Peace, as they call it, which has caused a lot of damage in this world, how that was all stolen out of Christian context as well, and that's why pagan Babylon Catholicism hides behind the veneer of Christianity, because there was a movement so strong, obviously, that they couldn't deny it, so they took what they want from it and, you know, basically leave out the rest and switch things around. So, you know, they believe Jesus is Lucifer in the Roman Catholic Church at the highest levels, and they honestly come out and say that, like the Easter Vigil, where they were honoring Lucifer, and they were saying how you were the great and eternal one who will never be destroyed, and all this blasphemous stuff to Christian thinkers. But Islam is Islam is pretty much on the same page, and that's along the lines of pretty much every other religion out there, and that's why the main conspiracy on this planet, if you get to it nuts and bolts, is the infiltration of Christianity and its outright destruction.
Okay. I got it. Any comments about that, Chris?
That seems to be the case when you're looking at stuff that's coming out of Hollywood or the entertainment industry. For sure. I mean, the overall culture is turned completely against Christian morality or Christianity, and you know, it's just either direct assault on Christianity continually. So it's definitely there's a lot of stuff, a lot of facts that you can point out that backs that up. And then showing what's happening on a kind of a global level. But I've heard other stuff too, where it's now that China is coming up as this world power, and at the same time, evangelical Christianity is like exploding in China.
Uh-huh.
From what I hear from different sources. So I don't know, Robin, what do you make of that?
I'm not sure what to make, because again, we get a lot of filtered news coming out of China, but I just need
to know if,
because this goes back to the other indoctrinations that I've been led to look in on, is that if they say that it's Christianity that they're promoting, are they promoting the Catholic version of Christianity or the true version of Christianity? Because the true version would not necessarily stand for a lot of things that are happening, right? And that's the kind of the truth behind the truth is that that book's, you know, the true faith in God being who he was as the Messiah kind of goes against 99.9% of what this world is doing.
Right.
And a lot of people are sold on the fact that, you know, even still Christians cause wars, when real Christians, you know, it's stated right in there that they don't do such things. And most of these wars were Catholicism wars, just, again, hiding behind Christianity to use it as a scapegoat. The same way the Jewish people are put in positions of power at fraudulent companies, so when they go down, everyone thinks it's a Jewish conspiracy.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So that's really the only thing I usually try to look up on if they're trying to say how something is exploding like Christianity, because I seem to think that the public is sold on one end of that, and on the other end, it's actually very different.
Well, I got the impression from different stuff I've read that it's not Catholicism. It's
okay.
Evangelical Christianity, meaning more of a Protestant,
yeah,
Calvinist sort of.
Well, that's interesting. I'll have to look at that because I don't really get a lot of info coming out of China, and I see that actually with Germany. Germany seems to have a really good blackout over a lot of information coming in and out of that country, and I just wonder what they're still trying to do, whether they're still trying to oppress that place down to the ground.
Uh-huh.
Which is interesting, if that's the case. So they come out of this strictly communist into now where it seems like they're more tolerant of religious practices and that sort of thing. But from what I understand, it's still officially oppressed or suppressed or persecuted.
Well, everything is pretty
modern
censored
China.
There. Everything is censored, well, in Germany. Well, getting just back to Germany, and you have to ask why. Is it just when it comes to Jewish history, is that just an excuse to cover up the big picture? Because
yeah, they definitely use anti-Semitism as a good whitewash.
Mm-hmm. So that's just a distraction from the real thing they want to cover up?
Yeah, it seems like it. Even though I think that the numbers prove, again, when you look at, like, say, the number of people joining Catholicism or something, that it gives you a very good idea of what's really happening as opposed to going off of other statistics. I think more of the religious stance is, when you can document it, it's a lot more truth-telling than, say, the other constructs that we're led to believe.
Uh-huh. Okay.
It was the same with America. America's had just as bad prison camps in their country when they first in the Civil War there, as what the Russian gulags were, or as what the concentration camps in Nazi Germany were. They were just as bad. And yet that doesn't seem to be documented at all or a lot in history, even touched on. And those were basically counter-reformation camps where they were to, again, suppress what Protestants they could, and anybody who was outside of that was obviously able to help perpetuate their system of temporal and spiritual power for Rome.
What do you think of the Protestant leaders, the Martin Luther and John Calvin and those folks?
I seem to think Martin Luther was a Jesuit trained in the same with Malcolm X. And these people were brought around to start race wars because that's one way of getting and undermining a country's population and their sovereignty is starting race wars. And that's where you can see the KKK coming out of. They were actually in the same with Mormonism. A lot of these different cult groups that come out all have their how do I explain it? They're that train of thought just derailed.
That's all right.
Yeah, you got so many windows open. I think I'm confusing myself sometimes here.
Yeah, don't have too many tabs, Wendell. Well, I'll just interrupt saying you're listening to Wake Up with Ab on radio.aberrado.info. We started at TalkShoe, but now we are over on our own Shoutcast server. We have a chat going on at the same time. That's at radioab.chattango.com. All these links are on the main page, radio.aberrado.info. Java is mentioning in the chat that the sound is good. That's great to hear. That's the main reason that I wanted to have something outside the TalkShoe system, which is a great system, but the fidelity isn't there, mainly because they host so many chats probably at the same time, and they couldn't possibly on a free basis offer such high bandwidth quality. So we're over here. We finally got all the audio working through Windows, which was a very difficult task, very difficult to find information online. If you're interested, you can always email me, and I'll show you how to do it. It is possible, and you only have to spend a few bucks on one particular program, which I use, which is called Virtual Audio Cables. So you don't need a mixer. You can do it, but you got to know how to bounce the sound around Windows, but I think we got it. So that's what we're doing here. So go ahead, Robin.
Well, I just want to get back to Chris's comment because I got kind of put back on the tracks here after I got back into the right tab about Martin Luther King Jr. and stuff and how they were race wars and Jesuit training. To be able to divide both the whites and the blacks, because there was a good sense of harmony in some aspects from the history of research where the blacks didn't mind being slaves, and I don't mean slaves as in being beaten, but they had good housekeepers, I guess, or handlers, as you call it, in some of the communities, and they were trying to rip that community apart and those bonds apart. The Jesuits, I mean, and create strife between them. Same thing they did with, like, the subtleness of, again, the hippie revolution. But I'm going to just post a link because this might give better info into how they stage these class wars.
And by they, you mean the Jesuits?
Yeah, it does all go back to the Jesuits.
Everything leads to the Jesuits.
Well, I wouldn't say it leads to them because they're the continuum of the Templars, and they're the continuum of, they're the Egyptian beliefs, which stemmed from Babylon. So they're the real occult masters that are kind of behind closed doors working a lot of this stuff. But even then, the ones that are paraded out in front of us probably they're just front men for the most part. They're not, I wouldn't say, like, when people say the Jesuits, believe me, that there's different levels of Jesuits we probably don't know of either. There's a council of 10, I believe. And nobody really hears of some of the names that come out of that council. Some people get bounced around a couple of names, but the Jesuits are the ones that, they really want to keep Rome as the power of this world. Uh-huh. And they're the ones who dive so much into the occult, Himmler was part of the occult and being trained by Jesuits, and the same with Bormann of Nazi Germany was the real power behind Hitler, and Hitler was trained Jesuit. So there's how do I explain it?
Sorry, what was that last link you posted? Sorry, I hate to interrupt. What was that last link you posted? If you could post that, by the way, into
chat.
The live fire chat, that's where I would like the links, if you don't mind.
Yeah, what my apologies. Was
it? Yeah, that's okay. What is that? What is that about?
Sorry, what is what?
Oh, what is the protocol history? What's that about?
Well, this one just goes into the Civil War. The protocols of Zion, or the Sion, what is that? The Sun, I think. So the protocols of the Sun. They're occult Luciferian worship. And I posted the page primarily on the U.S. Civil War to give a better follow-up as to what was really happening behind just two warring factions within one country, like the South and the North, because it gives a bit more truth behind the truth and how the Catholics weren't allowed to really have a big stake in the founding of that country. And it was sought even before to make that country fall under the Roman rule. So we can get an idea of how these Jesuits work, because they don't come in with guns blazing. They stand off to the side of the governments and advise them from the shadows. And so that's why when I even see pictures of certain Jesuits in certain pictures with all the political leaders or the Pope, that they wouldn't really want their pictures being taken. Hans Kolvenbeck, which a lot of people know of now, who didn't really know of him before, because of the internet, he's been able to get it. He actually, the Jesuit oath is to stay until your death. And, if you're elected as the, superior general, and he actually resigned before, obviously, his death. And so he's pretty much still in charge of things, but he had to get out of the forefront because of the heat that started to come out based on the internet. And so he's still working things behind the scenes. And Adolfo Nicholas, who's sworn in, I think, as the 35th congregation of the Superior Generals as the Superior General of the Jesuits, he's just a front man. But that's how these Jesuits run the show, is they don't come in and just start wars like head on. They usurp and advise from the shadows. And that's where you'll get a lot of truth to what's actually happening in the world, whether it's on 9/11, is because the further you dig and the more you look at the occult aspect of it and take that again with somewhat of a Christian view, you'll start to piece all the puzzle pieces back together in a proper fashion that gives you a better overall picture of what's actually happening on the planet, rather than just the Zionist conspiracy or the Bank of America, Federal Reserve money, and all that system. I don't know if any of this is making sense to you, but there's many different levels to this conspiracy until you get to the occult level, I believe, and then from there you can start piecing it together through its biggest rival, Christianity, I guess. And then you can start to see a lot more things that aren't talked about, like how Alex Jones, wants to lump in a whole bunch of nonsense with a bit of truth to make people not believe it. He definitely won't point fingers at Catholics. He won't point fingers at the Jesuits, even though it's historical fact that these people have been making concordats, like the Vatican has been making concordats to help get people like Hitler into power and to sponsor the National Socialists. They seem to forget that part of history, or the Council of Trent. Like, these are documented parts of history that, that just people seem to lose all focus on when trying to look at Agenda 21 or certain things that are happening in this world. And so that's
well,
what
we it, hear about them at all. I haven't even heard about some of those things you just mentioned, so maybe we never were taught them.
Yeah, and well, a lot of people aren't taught them, because I know some people went through school and they even had like classes called, you know, the knowledge of evil, and they've gone through how, you know, fascism is corrupt and businesses are corrupt and governments are corrupt. But again, I ask these people, do you know of the historical foundations to these things, to communism, how it started, where it started, and who started it, and that, and they can never give you a defining answer. But if you go back through the history, you can see that it's cropped up in many places that, that it's all been led to counter-reformations from a military arm wanting Rome to keep its absolute power on this planet and to keep that Babylonian one-world government in full form, to the point that it can reemerge from the ashes, I guess, like their gods believe, like the phoenix from the ashes, and kind of reinvent the world again in a satanic, somewhat antichrist rebellion of God. Yeah. Now, again, Catholicism was the first religion to kick out the Bible from schools. So you don't see that coming from a purely Christian standpoint. That's definitely documented from the Archdiocese of Baltimore, I believe, that that was going to happen and did happen. I'm just wondering how many other people get to this point in their research to be able to say that this has more truth to it, even if it doesn't want to seem polite, that it has more truth to it than what they're even being told with even the banking systems and all that.
Every time I hear the banksters, they just lose me. It just doesn't make any sense. He's saying that the bank that holds the money, that runs the investment, how do they control it? That to me is just another distraction. You could say anybody, but if you don't tie it together, it doesn't make sense. So that's why we're always looking for something to tie it together. Whether your explanation is correct, it's obviously difficult to verify as well, because there isn't information out there.
Yeah, well, when they run the game, they're going to try and get rid of all the remaining evidence that's incriminating against them. And I think that's why such a big push is on to rewrite and edit as many versions of the Bible as possible, like the Jehovah's Witness and Mormons and other sects of so-called Christianity, which aren't. They have complete sections missing out of the KJV and Geneva Bible, like almost whole like verses. And it's just amazing to go through it and to realize what's been changed as well, where they try to denounce the Messiah as being God himself to almost just some other type of prophet, you know, that wasn't really worth mentioning, I guess, and that's why they have to come up with all these extra add-ons like the Book of Mormon and things like that. But also, you can see the same roots with the Mormon cult there, just in talking about Mormons and how they believed in polygamy, and the same type of polygamy was believed in by the Nazis in their occult through Himmler, where, you know, he was to have as many babies as you want in Nazi Germany for the betterment of the Aryan race, I guess you could say, or the betterment of the German people. And you can see that those Jesuit ideals and beliefs came through as well. I forget the person who started, was it Brigham Young or Joseph Smith? One of them was into that, and that's what they got their beliefs from, is from that Jesuit infiltration as well.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much research you've done on that, but
me none. Yeah. What about you, Chris?
Okay, so I'm talking to myself here.
No, you're talking.
Oh, I've heard about the connections between Mormonism and Freemasonry, and that's, you know, you have Brigham Young, and then, you know, Joseph Smith. You have you can look up photos of Brigham Young with his Freemasonry pendant on, and, you know, they were all Freemasons, and look at a lot of the rituals between Mormonism and Freemasonry, or go down and look at their temples and stuff they have in Utah downtown, and what stands out to you first thing, if you're familiar with some of the symbolism that's in Freemasonry, is that they use a lot of the same symbolism on the Mormon temples. But yeah, it's a branch of Freemasonry, I guess. Would you say that, Robin?
Sort of a
branch of Freemasonry. Yeah.
Yeah. The Jesuits usurped Freemasonry and used that because the majority of Protestants were in Freemasonry, and they usurped it to basically do their own work for them unknowingly, or even knowingly at the highest ranks. And from there, it just got corrupted all the way through because the Jesuits are like bad fruit, I guess, if you want to look at it from a biblical standpoint. So everything that they produce will be bad fruit and eventually rot away. And I see a lot of, again, going back to the principles and occult principles that the Jesuits instilled in Nazi fascism for their party, and what they did during World War II for their Aryan race cause, that I see that with a lot of the Mormons as well, in how they are to produce, and just a couple of things that, like, their omissions and edited rhetoric from the Bible, and how they kind of change all that was Protestant down into another Catholic religion almost. That's one thing you can see with a lot of these different sects of so-called Christianity, is they have more roots in Catholicism than they do in Protestantism. Mm-hmm. But, yeah.
So, yeah, it is interesting how, you know, I've heard it said that, you know, the Bible is came out of the mystery schools, or it's a document that's put out by the so-called Illuminati or the controllers. And but if you look at the history, or alleged history, of that, it seems odd to me that there would be one religion that's put out to control the masses, and then have one develop within a few centuries that their whole main purpose seems to be primarily to suppress and keep that from the average person.
There's a lot of truth in that, where I would just think that the one person who's getting picked on the most has more truth in that, you know, like on the playground of bullies, than all the rest of the bullies, right? And it just seems like that's the way of the religions, is that you have one telling the truth. Yes, it might have been altered to some state, but most of it, I would think, is primarily true. A good moral absolute to stand on, to plant your feet in this shaky world, and the rest are kind of apostate, I guess. Is that the right word to use? Trying to usurp it and bully it into submission. What was I going to comment on about the Bible? I've heard a lot of rhetoric too, and I think it takes a personal expertise to understand the truth in the parables that are wrote in there at some degree, because when you get to a certain understanding of looking at the world in many perspectives through fakery, like 9/11, and through other things of the occult, and then you can weigh that up with, you know, your good personal expertise of real life experience to some regard, that you can see that these people wouldn't be doing what they're doing at the top with 9/11 if they adhered and even understood or comprehended the truth that's in that book. It almost is like, again, making 2 + 2 = 5 when you should know, you know, that it equals 4. They're basically throwing things out, like philosophy even. They create philosophy to turn people on their head, to turn them into this you know, go with the flow, everything's relative, and this relativism or futurism style approach to life, rather than having any moral absolutes or any notion of what's good and what's bad or what's right and what's wrong. It seems to be, and that goes back, I guess, to the shock and awe, and that's a good way to kind of get the masses into your mode of thinking, is to shock it out of their system so much, and then get them in awe of the things that shocked them, that they kind of lose all faith now in any type of moral code or standard. And that kind of goes back to what you're saying in previous conversations with Ab, that if you just tell the truth on things and not, you know, everyone not lie so much and create these deceptions and start defining certain aspects to reality, that people can really pinpoint down, that that we would all kind of live a more healthier lifestyle and not have to, you know, be bombarded with psyops and all this stuff to turn our world so backwards. Oh, excuse me.
Yeah,
I don't know where I was going with that, but it does. I guess you'd have to like do a bit of history on the religions and the whole thing to see how it goes. So I'm kind of just talking to myself here, throwing it out.
Oh, that's cool. I mean, all right. I hear what you're saying. I mean, it there's just different. I mean, I believe in the Bible. I mean, I've been a Christian like since I was very young. I understand the different large extent the different views on a lot of the different stuff that's going on with the government and stuff, you know, from a Christian or biblical perspective, and how that's kind of being sort of unfolding, you know, sort of the unfolding of prophecy and all that. Even though, like, when it comes to that subject, you know, that's trying to fit current events or things that are going on in the world today or in the recent past, and to reconcile them with Scripture, I'm at a loss, because I've seen a lot of stuff. I've read a lot of different stuff about prophecy, and there's some things that stand out, particularly with the fall of Jerusalem in AD 70. Now, if the Bible and the stuff that was prophesied about that was written prior to AD 70, that would be an astounding example of a fulfillment of prophecy. But as far as like going up into like the modern times and trying to fit like this nation of Israel into like some stuff that was in the book of Ezekiel or anything like that, I just don't see it. I mean, I could see how someone could take Scripture and overlay it onto just about anything and formulate an interpretation and stuff like that. But realistically and honestly, no, it doesn't work. It just does not work. And now, I there's some stuff in the Bible that can maybe be correspond to different events and sort of stuff that repeats in history, just because of the fact that that's just the way human nature is. But you know, to take the book of Revelation, I will have to say though that some stuff that's in the book of Revelation and some stuff that's, they say, is going to be proposed as far as the way that the world government is going to shape up. And, you know, with chipping the mark of the beast, you know, the receiving the mark, or you won't be able to buy or sell. I mean, that sort of thing seems to be a clear prophecy of something to come. But, I like to say is I've heard so much different stuff on where I attended church. It was... that whole take on prophecy was what would be known as the preterist view, essentially saying that, yeah, the Book of Revelation, it was prophetic to an extent. There's different stuff in the Bible that talks about the end of the age or end of the world, but for the most part, you can find historical correspondence to actual events that did happen, like the fall of Jerusalem in AD 70, the number of the beast referring to Emperor Nero, and like, you know, that's the, and John, you know, like he says in the Book of Revelations, you know, these are things that will shortly come to pass. So he's not really talking about something that's going to be in the far future, like 2,000 years down the road. So you can like take Revelations and you can like you can overlay it over ancient Roman history and the stuff that was going on with Christians and Jews at that time and say, well, this is a different clear fulfillment of that. I think that's the position that where I attended church took that position. But the one thing that gets me about the Bible too, it's this whole premise that, you know, we can communicate to God through this written word. And, you know, we know that the written word is a man's invention. And you know, not everybody on this planet, even in the year 2012, can read. So the problem I have really thinking kind of into the whole, kind of going back to the whole premise of the Bible, which is, okay, God is communicating to us through this written word. The problem I have is, well, how, you know, did God see fit to communicate to his creation with the written word when such a large percentage of the people on the face of the planet can't even read? So it's kind of like this, you have to have this kind of, you have to accept this premise kind of going into it and accept a given that, okay, we have this written word and then like everybody knows how to read and then this is, we need to pay attention to this because this is what needs to shape and guide our direction on the planet. And, but the problem is like, you know, and especially at the time when the Bible was allegedly penned, the illiteracy on the planet was even greater from what I understand. Of course, I wasn't there. I don't know, but I would surmise that that was the case. So here we go with, you know, God gives his will to his creation, everything we need to know to be in, have a relationship with him is right there in his word. But fact is that the ability to read and to, you know, especially to study, like it says in 1 Timothy 2:21, a study to show thyself approved, a workman that need not be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. It's saying study, be diligent to look into the word. Well, that excludes a big chunk of the world population, because a big chunk of the population can scarcely read, let alone study. So, you know, when that admonition would obviously be given towards someone who's, especially at that time, was sort of an elitist class, someone who had the money and the means to put a child through school and learn how to read, from what I understand, you know, of the conditions that were going on during that first century, you know. So that's the I mean, what do you think about that, Robin? I mean, that's kind of the problem, like, now with how my thinking has progressed over the years. I've kind of come to that, and I'm like, I'm kind of like stuck on that with the Bible. I'm like, well, I mean, is that true or is that not true, you know?
Yeah, it's a tough one when you get to that root, whether the language itself is completely corrupted to the point that you can't really take much out of it. I I would have to think that as far as it's made it, it seems to hold some truth. But yeah, when you go back to how even the language was formed from Phoenician or Canaanite, Phoenician through Egyptian, and the Norse ruin that like it. It does pose some problems. Yeah. Trying to wrap my head around that. It does very much so. Yeah. It's, the only thing I know, that I can sense, I guess, about it. And this is just coming from a subjective standpoint is that not everyone was supposed to read those words, that there are half the people on this chessboard who are to read it and the other half are just unfortunately don't have that privilege, I guess. And that's not to say that they're wrong people, but in the grand scheme of things, it kind of goes back to why I guess people bring up why certain people die and other people don't. I guess that they were part of that choice of getting picked or not getting picked. So I do see that there's been an evolution to get the word out. To anybody who's learned it, they have had a duty and a conviction to get it to as many people in as many tongues as possible. But then again, that is also our sentient being of free will, where we can take it or we can leave it.
So it's like the Great Commission is what you're talking about, where he says, go out into all the world, preaching the gospel to all men. He who believes and is baptized will be saved. He does not believe will be condemned. So so there's that great commission that's given in the gospel at different times. It's like, so go out into the whole world and tell everyone. And like you said, they can either accept it or they can't. But whatever the case, whether you accept it or you don't, if you can't read, you have to basically have, okay, now you have a middleman, which would be your priest or your missionary or what have you. And so like the Aboriginal or the Native American or the Inuit or whoever the missionary was going to go to, they're dependent, for their salvation to, on this man who would be this missionary or this priest and, whatever that they tell them is what they have to go by, because they don't know how to read. And God chose this communication medium, which is the written word, which is invented by men. But God chose that medium to communicate to men. And so, but since so many men can't read, then you have this third party or this middleman, which would be the missionary. You see what I'm saying? So it's like,
yeah.
So whatever, like you say, the King James Bible is the Bible, or, I mean, for the longest time, that's a moot point, man, because like you have so many people even to this day, that's a moot point because people can't read. I have friends who can't read, and they went through high school. They graduated high school and they can't read. They're functionally illiterate. They can't read. And I was sort of on this spiritual quest or journey or kind of fact-finding mission, kind of just my own off-the-cuff kind of thing, where I took a trip and I stayed in a strange city and I kind of just got into this mode of thought, and I kind of wandered around and was taking in new sights, and I wanted to meet new people, and I wanted to take in their experiences and get into conversations about religion and things. And I was kind of like asking God, okay, now please, I've went out here, not even for any particular reason whatsoever, just in order to maybe God will see, okay, he's putting forth the effort, I'll throw him a bone, sort of thing. That was kind of like my, what was going on in my mind. I'm not saying that I actually spoke to God or he came to me in a cloud or anything. I'm just saying that's kind of what was going on. But anyway, I met a man who attended church where, you know, like the same denomination, the Church of Christ, where I attended. And so I wanted, you know, to engage him in discussion about struggling with, because, you know, I believe that, you know, what was being taught at this denomination where I was attending that was in conflict with, you know, the Bible. And I wanted to, like, and this was an older gentleman, black gentleman, and, you know, I thought, well, you know, this guy's been in the church a long time. You know, he maybe can help me with this. Maybe we could, you know, bounce some ideas off, you know, back and forth. And so I had lunch with him and his wife, and we were, you know, talking, you know, small talk. And then, you know, so I started getting into this discussion about this doctrinal issue and stuff. And it was like, well, to make a long story short, it come down to this man could not read. And he explained to me, you know, he grew up in the South. Being a black man in the South, he wasn't given any educational opportunities much to speak of. He had to work on a farm. His parents were sharecroppers. And he worked his whole life, and he really never learned how to read. And I was like, wow, so, like, we're not going to get into a discussion then. Well, not really, no. We're not, because he doesn't even know where I was coming from on this stuff, you know. But, he, you know, he attended there, and he'd been there, and he was been a faithful member of that church for a long time. But he didn't know, he couldn't read, so that was kind of like, there was no point in going to the scripture and going to a discussion about it, because I would have to, the only way that it could, that discussion could continue along that avenue is if I would say, oh, I would read off of scripture and he would give his interpretation or whatever. And I just thought, well, this has taught me something that I learned that's like, you know, trying to communicate and try to study, you know, in order to show yourself approved unto God, is not possible for many, many people, you know? And it's like, it's easy to miss that if you've grown up in this so-called modern civilization where everybody's, for the most part, is taught to read, and you think, well, everybody knows how to read, and you go to church and they tell you to study, and you need to study your Bible. That was heavily emphasized when I went to church. And you just assume that, like, yeah, well, everybody can read, so when somebody's telling me that, you know, I need to study my Bible to be in a relationship with God and to understand His will, I just accept. But I went into that accepting the premise that, you know, that's reading and studying is a given. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and it's not a given.
Have you ever got to the point of whether? Because that's what Arminianism is taught with a lot of the Jesuit usurping in this world, that we are to be saved through salvation of works. And I was just wondering whether, because the whole premise that Martin Luther hinged on was that God elects us to be saved. So I never went to church, never really cared to have much of this in my life all the way up until probably 20 years of age. And then I started to get a little bit more into it. And started to see some things that they couldn't even tell you in church, that you have to somewhat be called upon on your own. And from there, I guess from what I take from the Bible is that, yes, you are to share it because you can understand it and read it, and you will help those who read it. To all the pastors or priests out there who say that they are the ones to hand down this information, I find that that's kind of erroneous, because they want their authority positions and their worship positions. And I think the word is meant to be listened to those who will hear it, who've been called to hear it, and only those. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I understand that a lot of people aren't being taught the properness to certain things in the church, so they kind of, yeah, get a false representation on how it looks. But yeah, to go back to some people not being able to read in general, to be able to even go into it. they seem to think that maybe it was never there for them to begin with in the first place. Not again to say that people are bad, they're just not, they're not supposed to hear it. Because you got people out there who can read and they can't even hear it. So,
yeah.
It's kind of,
well, I mean, that's,
it's a toss up some days, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of, has been, after that incident happened, you know, with the gentleman there, that it just kind of struck me, because I up until that point, I had been for years struggling with doctrine and these issues, one of them being, you know, salvation by grace through faith, involving different debates with different people. You know, another one being, classes, Bible classes, you know, separating the congregation into Bible classes. And then, like, in the Bible, clearly states that women are forbidden to speak in church. It does say that. It says in, Second Peter, I believe. Or the Second Timothy. It's like, okay, you know, I'm attending this very fundamentalist Christian church, which would be construed as fundamentalist because, you know, they believe in following the Bible, which made total sense to me. It says, well, you know, why would you want to be in a church and not follow what the Bible says? Because if you're not following what the Bible says, you're just going with whatever, and what difference does it make what you do anyway? So that made sense to me. So I wanted to keep with that. I wanted to keep that line of reasoning consistent and say, well, you know, okay, now that I'm with these other like-minded people who've made this commitment to follow the Bible, I feel compelled to call them out when I don't think that, that we're following the Bible on this particular doctrinal issue. You see what I'm getting at?
Yeah, really.
So you're kind of in this mode of thinking that, you know, well, in order to avoid hypocrisy, which you obviously want to do, if you be a Christian, you want to avoid the hypocrisy of, saying, like, you know, this understanding and following of the scriptures is, you know, essential to be pleasing in the God, yet on the other hand, we kind of just bypass this scripture over here we don't like, we're going to take this one and we're going to add this thing. You can't do that. So that
that's what I see a lot of problems with even in Christian churches, is that they're leading to more like a futurism or some type of alternative ideal that's not stated in the truth of those parables.
Right.
And most of the people at the pulpits don't preach the real truth of the word, because if they did, they'd lose a lot of people very fast. But then that's what is stated, that I think Satan does a lot of his hardcore work through religion, because of how it can manipulate people's trust. But at the same time, I just see that the people aren't upholding to the truth in it, regardless of how it makes them look in society anyway, because it even states in there that you'll be hated amongst even your family members.
Right.
You know, all your friends, you'll lose to get your life. You have to give this world up. And
yeah.
I don't know too many people who can do that to the point that they could even follow or even understand a tenth of what those parables were meaning, even if they somewhat contradict each other. But yeah, to get back to the origins, didn't it, it's been elusive in people's understanding of it as well, because it's been forcibly hidden through the regimes of the centuries, primarily the Catholic Church all the way back to Constantinople or Constantine, to the point that even today most of it is still read in Latin. You know, they do all their masses in Latin, so they don't want you understanding what is actually being said in there. That isn't a great help to people trying to, like, there's so many avenues that the word, I think, has been usurped, that it really, that's why our world is so corrupt, is that nobody has a moral foothold anymore in this world, and everyone's as shaky as a leaf, to the point that you can create a complete society on its head and have people understand it better than they can understand the truth that goes into some of these parables.
Yeah. Well, there's a passage in scripture that says, how do soldiers go to the sound of the trumpet if it's not a distinguishable sound? You know, so it was referring to a thing in the book of First Corinthians where it's talking about the speaking in tongues. So it's like, well, why are they speaking in tongues if there's nobody there to translate? It's like, you know, you're speaking gibberish. It's kind of like what you're talking about, what they do with the Latin, you know. But the scriptures clearly said, you know, if you're going to get up and speak or prophesy or something, you have to do it, you know, naturally. You have to do it so that the people in the congregation can understand it. But then, that's don't makes total sense. But why did I bring that? Oh, well, I mean, the Christian churches will always end the prayer with amen, and that's not a, as far as I know, that's not an English word. It's not an English word, and it's not something whose definition is commonly, I don't think, understood between all Christians, which it should be, because they end every prayer in it. So, and I've heard that, you know, Amen is a reference to Amun-Ra, the hidden god of ancient Egypt. And I said, well, I don't know about that. I mean, I know it sounds phonetically very similar. I mean, is that the same? I guess it, you know, okay. But, you know, is that a fact? So, well, the truth remains, though. It's like, okay, here you say a prayer in English, and the language that everybody is understanding, and then you end it with a Hebrew word, you know, or what? You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
So,
well, I'm gonna just switch gears here and wonder then what your take would be on righting the wrongs of society to the most educated slaves that ever lived. What would be their ability to come out of this funk then, to come out of this mass hypnosis upon them, and or occult sorcery? What would be their greatest weapon to reversing that spell if they weren't going to dive into the absolute truths of the Bible?
Well, it doesn't seem like the Bible is doing much in that respect. I mean, at least not in the churches that I've ever attended. I mean, now you go to any church, it's like, you know, this is another reason why I left the church, is the people in the church, you know, the Bible says that God chosen for himself a peculiar people, a people that will, you know, meaning, well, I take that to mean something that's distinguishable from everybody else. I guess that would be a pretty good translation of that, you know, or interpretation of that, what that means to be a peculiar people. And but you know, I'm not downing anybody or judging
anybody.
No,
that's okay.
I just make that clear that I'm not putting myself above anybody that I attended church with. But the fact was that, like, if you took any one of those people who attended it at random and say, well, what is it they do that they conduct their life that makes them very much distinct from everybody else out there? And I was saying, well, let's take a look at it. Okay, they send their children off to strangers to be raised. Okay, that's a common thing that's in the church. You know, everybody does that. You know, I don't feel that's a Christian thing to do. But then, hey, you know, who am I to say? But okay, that's definitely of the world, I would say. I mean, I don't think that a Christian in the right mind would do it. I don't think that. But you know, okay, That's you know, and they conduct their life. They engage in the customs of the world around them. You know, they purchase slave labor goods from China, and they don't make any conscious decision about that. They don't even think about it. They don't even factor into their consideration of those people. They put their parents in nursing homes when they're old, just like the rest of the people do in the society. They really, I mean, there's really, what I'm getting to is, they'll have a child, for instance, and then return to work 30 days later. The woman will return to work and then, like, put the child in an infant in daycare, you know. So that's the stuff I see that's like, okay, you're wondering why your children grow up and don't attend church because you're not even raising them and instilling them in your values into them. Why would you expect them to stay in church or stay with your values when you give them over to somebody else to indoctrinate them, you know? So,
That's why I see a lot of people coming out of the church.
Yeah. I mean, the church is
it's ridiculous.
The church and is actually just, it's just like a piece of wet tissue. It's like it doesn't do anything as far as opposition to the world system. You talk to most church members and you want to get into 9/11 truth or anything, they'll stand there and stare at you like you're the devil himself with a pitchfork. You know, like, why are you talking about this stuff? Yeah, it's like, well, why are you fearful, Christian? Why are you afraid and fearful to talk about this stuff? If you have an assurance that you're going to go to heaven, why does this stuff of the world disturb you where you don't even talk? You're afraid to speak of it. You know, that's what I would want to say. Hey, get yourself in all kinds of trouble. That's what you do. And then they don't want you around because you're speaking the truth. That's where I seem to think.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. That's like every religion, but a lot of Christians.
These are people that read and study the Bible all the time, and look at the Bible, and talk about the Bible, and you know. So, what is the Bible doing? I mean, that's another question I have. It's like, okay, if the Bible is such a strong force for good, where are the fruits of it? Is what I want to know. It's like where are the fruits from the Bible that prove to you and prove to me that. Okay, this is of God, and when somebody takes this into their heart and starts, then you see the fruit, you see change, you see something separate from what's in the common culture in the world.
I seem to think that's on a personal level where you might notice that in your own life, because at the same time, I find again there's people who will sit through the church for 50 years listening to some man, but they'll never get what the point is or what that's even. And so when I look at my own personal life.
I understand that. We're talking about individuals, but the church is made up of individuals.
Right? Yeah, but they're compromising.
Right, exactly. They're compromising. That's exactly my point. It's like they're compromising with the world system. And but how else could you come out of the world system is what you're asking without some sort of a guide or something that tells something that comes to you and specifically tells you stuff like abandoning your children is wrong or killing somebody is wrong or I mean, you do have a conscience, you know, you're born with a conscience, you know, and like, it seems to me like whether you're exposed to the Bible, you're exposed to Voltaire, or you're exposed to, Richard Dawkins, or whatever that you're exposed to growing up, if you don't go with your conscience, you're going with just, you have that choice. You can go with your conscience or you can go with what the consensus is, you know, or social validation or whatever. I mean, those choices seem like they're always the same no matter what kind of indoctrination, either it be religious or secular or what have you. It seems like people are always left with those choices no matter what, you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, definitely the Bible, I mean, on the other hand, I say, I mean, nothing really lays it out like the Bible, and it's definitely distinct from anything else that I've ever come across or read. I mean, as far as it being able to lay open like a lot of this stuff and to point out, and if it's from the Illuminati or whatever, they certainly did an excellent job of condemning themselves.
Yeah, that's usually one of their first tactics, isn't it?
But isn't that kind of, yeah, one of a ploy is to come out and attack yourself, and then so yeah, I mean, it's I'll have to say, man, I'm conflicted. I really am. I really am.
I hear that. I'm still got some conflictions on certain sides that I still need to work out as time progresses. But I just don't know where humanity is going to make a new law or make a new invention or any type of new part to fix a society when they can't get a hold of the truth behind the truth, even if it's not necessarily the Bible being 100% true. That even the truths within that. That people should pertain to are being disregarded for groupthink or what, you know, like in churches or anywhere, institutions of any sort. And I think that that's mankind's real big problem at this time in this world is getting back to some type of moral absolute. Because until they do that, they're going to still cheat and lie and kill each other for whatever selfish or egotistical means they have.
Yeah, so this idea too, this kind of premise that, you know, as a group or a nation or a, you know, I've like changed my thinking a lot on that. I've spoken to a lot of people. Debated a lot of people about religion, religious doctrines, points of doctrine, ad nauseum, man. I mean, a lot, I'm telling you.
And, yeah, it gets a bit much.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, I think one thing that really I took away from it was that no two people that I've ever spoken to in my entire life believe the same thing about that Bible. Not any two people, not any two people. And I'm talking about variations that are wide variations. And I'm talking about people who attend the same denomination, the same church that I attended for the most part.
Narrow is the path, right? Supposedly.
Yeah, narrow is a path, but man, I mean, it's, you know, that's, and that gets to, too, I was a member of the Church of Christ, you know, and that was really, you know, like emphasized, you know, hey, you know, these other denominations, you know, they don't follow the plan of salvation in the Bible, which, you know, from what I can read in the Bible, they didn't, you know, they substituted scriptural baptism for a prayer that you recite. And I'm like, well, you know, and I would ask the different, you know, people who are of that position, like, well, okay, where is this prayer at that you tell people that you want to convert that they need to recite? Well, I mean, okay, fine. Show me that in the Bible. And like, well, you know, I'll take you down Romans Road and you know what I'm talking about where it's the different scriptures and they'll say, well, this is, you know, you confess with your mouth. Okay. Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God. Am I saved? Well, no. And see what you need. You need to you need to pray this prayer. Okay, where's this prayer in the Bible?
That's all religious dogma.
Yeah, I mean it's like so this person's an evangelical Christian. You know, they want to convert me and save me. It's like, well, getting your authority for this prayer or this plan of salvation that you're engaging me in? Like, it's not in the Bible. But, you know, it's like that, it doesn't seem to matter at all. And then the same thing, and not to point out any particular anybody in a denomination, the same thing I found out applied to people that I attended with that I thought were of the like mind in church. I would say, okay, here's clearly something that's in the Bible, and I don't think this is being taught correctly in the church. So I bring this up, and it's like, it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. There was always some like justification or something that you could bypass it, and
yeah,
and it didn't have to make sense, didn't have to follow center logic or be backed up by any other scripture. And it was so, and I kept hitting this over and over and over again, and I was like, well, is it me? Because I can't read, or what is the deal, or is it? Does everybody really honestly understand it different? Because that's not the case with anything else. Like, for instance, like if you and I were gonna be pilots and pilot a plane, and let's say we're going on a transatlantic flight, and you're the pilot, I'm the co-pilot, I pick up the manual, and you're asking me, okay, what, how do we eject the toilet water out? Well, I don't know, I've never done it before, let's go to the manual. I think we could probably by me going to the manual and reading it to you, and you, and then you take it in and read it, I think we could. It's pretty safe to assume that we could arrive at a solution that we both agree on. Wouldn't you think? Just if the manual is written in English and we could both read English, you know, it would be clear. We'd have the instructions. Okay, go to panel 3, pull it open, and hit the blue button, and it dumps the water, and then you're done. You know, but the Bible, it's like, okay, this passage. Well, you know, that's this context, or this, you're reading it wrong. Okay, give me another passage. You know, it's like, you can't agree with that person on that. Because from my perspective, they're not following a coherent logic. But yeah. I guess, fine, were they? I don't know. I mean, do they really honestly believe that interpretation of it? And why is that interpretation differ so much from mine? You know what I mean? But I kept running into that. And I was like, well, what is this?
Do you feel, on a personal note, do you feel that you have more grasp of that than the rest of the people out there that have learned the same thing? Like, has that influenced your life more than, say, theirs, because you don't compromise on so many things?
I just try to be honest, man. I try to be honest with myself, and I really like it when other people are honest with me. You know, I live my life that way, and intellectual dishonesty is dishonesty, and when I perceive that in people, it makes me mad. I don't like it. I don't like associating with intellectually dishonest people that will not ever concede a point.
Yeah.
And but then on the other flip side, it's like, well, am I questioned myself. I said, am I the one that's seeing it wrong? And then could it be possible that I'm in the wrong and I just don't see it, and I'm trying to impose this interpretation on this person who's honestly, or maybe even actually, in the right? You start to ask those questions, and then it's like, well, how do you ever arrive at any conclusion with this? And I kept running over and over and over. I'm telling you, it just about drove me insane, dude.
Yeah. It does. No, I've had plenty of conversations myself where it's drove me to the point of insanity. But that's where I ask if it's a subjective thing for you, because I've been led to believe myself that there's it's again, it's an elect thing where only those who have chased after some type of truth behind the truth can see where things have gone wrong in that aspect, where everybody else, even if, again, they've believed in their dogma for 75 years, they can't see it because they were never in the right, like their hearts weren't right, you know what I mean? And I guess that's being honest with yourself, too. Goes back right to being honest with yourself, that you got to get your heart right with yourself and with this world for you to be able to accept and to see the truth or validation in a lot of points that maybe come out of that. Because, yeah, there's a lot of people who go to church on many days just to be able to do the bad things for the rest of the week, right? Or, like, to keep their bullshit games going for the rest of the week. And there's a lot of people who believe that, again, like, even Sunday worship is what was said, and the Sabbath is on Saturday. So there's a lot of people who go to church, and they're not even given proper truth to anything. So the hardest work, again, was influencing.
Sunday was created by the Catholics, and I've seen stuff that backs that up, and you know. But then, man, the list never ends. I'm telling you, it doesn't. But the doctrine stuff, I hear music.
Yeah, it's we're getting on to the 3-hour mark. I just thought I'd pull in a bit of music to remind everyone you're on Wake Up With Ab. Very interesting, very in-depth conversation. You guys could probably go at it for many hours more, but we do have limits. But
well, how long are you running for, Ab?
I think right about now.
Okay, because we could always take it back to 9/11 if you wanted to.
Well, if I had enough strength, I probably would. But I'm starting to nod off here just because of the time. But we can do this again. It was very interesting, very entertaining. I think you guys both have a very high level of knowledge when it comes to all this religion and whatnot. Chris, you come from a church background, and I think Robin, you come from a slightly different background, self-educated, I guess, right?
Yeah, for the most part.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
Do you attend church, Robin?
No. I was forced to go a few times when I was younger, but that was about it for some holidays, which again were pagan. So I didn't get much of that. It kind of got to me at a certain point. Past looking into all the fakery and stuff, I figured there had to be more truth behind the truth.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. Well, we can do this again, guys, on another get together. I think this one was pretty successful. We had some pretty good sound, pretty good chat. So hopefully we can get a few regular listeners over here. We still have Bootleg Bill going full bore in the chat. Thanks for listening, Bootleg and Jabbering, and a couple anonymous, which is probably Chris and Robin, got logged in and out a few times. So, again, very interesting stuff. And, Chris, thanks very much for joining us.
Alright, yeah, appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Chris.
Yeah, very interesting. I know Robin wanted to speak to you directly because he thinks quite highly of you as well with all your background there. So, and Robin, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much, Ab.
Appreciate that. And thanks, everyone, for joining us at radio.aberrato.info. And everyone, have a great night. And we'll post this up on the website, so if you want to listen back to it, you can at radio.aberrato.info under the Robin Fisher / Chris Kendall blog entry. All right, guys, have a great night.
Thanks, you too.
All right, cool. All right. Take care.
Take care, guys. We'll talk again.
Bye-bye.
When a spirit is broken, why go on when there's nothing to say?
just couldn't say. And the years they had fallen, one by one, how they drifted away. But now I'm free as a bird. Yes, I'm feeling okay as I face a brand new day. As I face the brand new day. Story.